From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, one of the rock music's greatest drummers joins us. I'm not going to tell you who he is. Not just yet. Not just yet. Here's what's happening. Apple iPhones and other U.S. goods could suffer sales hits in China if President-elect Donald Trump goes through with his plan of slapping a large import tariff on Chinese products, according to a state-backed newspaper. That's what they're warning. During his election campaign this year, Mr. Trump spoke of a 45% import tariff on all Chinese goods while failing to outline just how that would work. We'll find out. Kenneth Cole is closing all of its stores, nearly all of them. The retailer is shutting down 63 outlet stores across the U.S. All of them will shut down within the next 6 months, leaving just two full-price stores that will remain open. That's it. Registered investment advisor Michael Mish Shedlock with us. Mish, is this an internet attack again or what?
It continues, doesn't it, George?
Yep, it sure does.
In September, 14 major retailers announced 100 stores are closing or more. American Eagle, Chico's, Children's Place, Macy's was one of them, Office Depot, Sears, Sports Authority, Walgreens, goes on and on and on. Meanwhile, one thing that I've not seen talked much about in the news is the effect that the Trump election has had on mortgage rates. In 4 days since the election, 10-year Treasury rates have risen 0.4%.
Jeez.
They rose 0.3% in the month preceding that. That's 0.7%, at least a half a point. George, people who didn't lock in are scrambling to lock in their mortgages now, panicked, because they can't afford the house they just bought.
Well, you know, it's a sad time. I mean, economically, things seem okay, but these stores, as you said, Mish, are shutting down left and right. The Kenneth Cole store, 63 stores. I mean, that's a lot of stores with a lot of employees.
It is. And I want to go back on, because the last time we were on, I talked about global trade, and you just mentioned it right before I came on. I supported Trump, but I don't support these massive tariffs. If we get into a trade war, it's just like what we did in the Great Depression. Shades of Smoot-Hawley, the Tariff Act that really drove the U.S. into the depths of the Depression. You have the EU fighting with the U.K. You have the U.S. fighting with China. And yesterday, President Hollande in France came out. He does not like Donald Trump one bit. And he said, if Trump backs out of the global warming deal, that he's going to put a unilaterally, I don't think he can do it, but the EU certainly could, put a carbon tax on all products from the U.S. We are talking a massive trade war, and this is just what I've been fearing all along, George.
All right, Mish, thanks for the feedback. I was at a restaurant tonight. I'm in St. Louis for the holidays, by the way, obviously, as you heard from the open. And I'm in St. Louis, and I was at a restaurant, and I heard a Hillary and Trump supporters going at it over the results of the election. I mean, they were just yelling to the point where the restaurant folks had to tell them, hey, folks, quiet, calm down. And, you know, the one person, the Hillary fan, was telling the Trump supporter, hey, Donald Trump's already gone back on Obamacare. He said he was going to have it repealed. That's not going to happen. He's going to go back down on the wall. That's not going to happen. He's backing down on NATO. We're still going to be members of NATO. That's not going to happen. And they were just going at it. So we're going to see what happens. We're going to do a program, by the way, in a week or two on the Electoral College and what it means and how they can change their vote before the president truly is sworn into office. So this is not a done deal yet. Even though the mandate is Donald Trump has now been elected, the Electoral College, which includes votes from every state based on the amount of senators, which are two per state, and congresspeople, which are more, varies by population, they have the right to change the vote. And that could be strange. So we'll see what happens, how this unfolds. A pint of beer a day could help reduce the risk of having a stroke or developing cardiovascular disease, according to a new research study. A study of 80,000 adults found that the natural decline in high-density lipoproteins, that's LDL cholesterol or good cholesterol in the body, was slowed by a moderate intake of alcohol. The results show that one or two daily servings of alcohol for a man or one for a woman, it was associated with a slower decline. And what do you think about that? Diabetes, rocketing by 75%. The number of adults with the disease rises by 1.5 million. The data shows the number of adults with this disease has gone up by in the past 10 years. Let's check in with researcher, author of MyHeartBook.com, Christian Wild. Why is this happening, Christian?
It is terrible, George, and it's been happening for several years where they've been reporting WebMD and Diabetes Association and National Institutes of Health have been reporting that there's a terrifying rise in diabetes in every corner of the country. From 1980 to 2015, it rose fourfold from 5.5 million to 22 million. I'm going to share some good news with you and your audience, what the evidence is that diabetes can be reversed. But I think we should agree that we as a nation need to absolutely take this disease seriously, not only for ourselves, but for our children, as more than 86 million young people are unaware that they are in pre-diabetes. American Diabetes Association blames in part the high-risk diets, the lack of exercise, and they have repeatedly said that their fear is that many of this generation may not outlive their parents. The complications, George, diabetic retinopathy, which causes blindness.
Oh, boy.
Diabetic neuropathy, which causes the most severe debilitating leg and foot pain as the disease attacks and destroys nerves. Diabetes with stroke, heart disease are closely and dangerously linked. Also, diabetes is the direct cause of more than 77,000 leg amputations per year. It's a devastating disease, and yet here is how it may be prevented and possibly be reversed. Diabetes Today posted research that showed you can lower your risk of type 2 diabetes by 58% by losing 7% of your body weight. As an example, 15 pounds if you weigh 200 pounds, exercising moderately, brisk walking 30 minutes a day, 5 days a week, avoid all white bread, opt for pumpernickel, avoid white rice and potatoes, opt for high protein and less carbohydrates. And for the best health, make sure for men, your waistline is not above 40 inches, and for women, 35 inches. Now, the journal Clinical Nutrition found that people who took turmeric.
Powder of turmeric, that's
there
right.
There we go. Had improved blood levels of all three biomarkers associated with diabetes, as well as reducing fasting blood sugar and hemoglobin A1C.
Well, and the best way, and thank you, Christian, the best way is to lose a little weight. Christian's website, myheartbook.com. It's all part of our Twitter feed, by the way, so I hope you're part of that. A Texas woman has been charged with theft and child endangerment after police found exotic animals living in the same house as her 14-year-old daughter. With her 14-year-old daughter, Trisha Meyer, arrested after a months-long investigation into her Houston home, found that several wild animals lived in that house, three tigers, a skunk, a fox, as well as several monkeys in the house. Imagine if scientists discovered that an asteroid was on its way toward Los Angeles. The possibility has existed on the pages of Hollywood scripts, but in what may be a case of life-intimidating art, NASA and the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, and other government agencies engaged in a planetary protection exercise to consider the devastating consequences of a 330-foot asteroid hitting the Earth. The simulation projected a worst-case blast wave by an asteroid strike in 2020 that could level structures across 30 miles, requiring a mass evacuation of L.A., causing tens of thousands of casualties. I wonder what they know that we don't. And I went outside moments before airtime to just take a look again at the supermoon, and it is fantastic. Haven't seen that in 68 years. Let's check in with Dr. Sky. Boy, was it big tonight.
George, absolutely fantastic. This entire weekend, I think more eyeballs, I think you would agree, have been peering toward the moon. And you're so right. We're out tonight doing a public program, about 100 people, and I'm sure all over the country and around the world. But something fascinating has to be reported about this particular supermoon. A researcher named Nigel Gray apparently put out a Facebook posting back on November 6th saying that there could be indeed some earthquakes associated with the close proximity of the moon. Now, we've heard this before, but we do know, sadly, that two major earthquakes have taken place on planet Earth right around the time of the supermoon. One, of course, in Christchurch, New Zealand, and then another one, about a 6.8 here in, of course, the nation of Argentina. But something fascinating to report about this, George, is that with these particular earthquakes, observers and people with their video cameras and smartphones, iPhones such as Android phones, have been seeing blue and green flashes of light in the sky, extremely mysterious, right around the time of the Australian earthquake.
That's right.
Where the Australian plate literally collided with the Pacific plate. So here's the bottom line. More and more research, the University of Tokyo has been talking about this for a long time. The proximity of the moon, obviously the supermoon, and the induction or incidence, higher incidence of earthquakes needs to be studied. And I'm sure they'll be studying more. But in the live sky, always exciting things, George, to talk about. Don't forget, in spite of all the bright moonlight, this week we reach the peak of another of the great meteor showers called the Leonids. It occurs on the morning of the 17th. Best way to see it, looking to the east from 3 a.m. till sunrise, but the only drawback is still some bright light of the moon. These particular meteors come from Comet Temple-Tuttle, goes around the sun once every 33 years, and if you spy on any of these, they're from this debris blown out of the comet's tail in the year 1533. And finally, with the sun, we haven't talked about that in a long time, sunspot activity may be low, but a phenomenon known as coronal holes, meaning that this is an opening in the sun's pores to the surface, is sending higher and faster streams of solar particles, the solar wind, thus causing great auroral displays in both the northern and southern hemispheres. Dr. Sky reminds everyone always to always remember to keep your eyes to the skies.
Thank you, Stephen. And again, looking at the supermoon, absolutely fantastic. And also, of course, the blue lights that he was talking about around the New Zealand Australian earthquake at that area, highlighted at coasttocoastam.com. There's an incredible story there. In a moment, money, morality, and the machine. That's right. Craig Smith joins us for a fascinating discussion on how this all affects you next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast Economist Craig Smith back with us. He was on with me a couple years ago when we talked on his book, Don't Bank on It. Greg is a student of history, author of 9 incredible books. Maybe 10 now, Craig. What's the number?
If you count the spiritual book I wrote first, it's actually 10 now, George.
Good for you. How have you been?
I've been terrific. You know, things have been really good. I'm going to be a grandpa.
Well, congratulations. I've been 1 6 times, so it's a great feeling.
I always hear about your grandchildren, George, and it's one thing I'm really looking forward to. My daughter's due on the 19th of December, so we're going to have a special gift for Christmas this year.
Greg, my son and his wife and their 2 little kids were living with me in St. Louis for some time until he was able to save up some money and get a house. And the little one, she was about 2 or 3 at the time. Her name's Charlotte. We call her Charlie. Just a beautiful little girl. But when they all moved out, and when they moved out, I painted up some of the rooms and stuff. And I saw a spot on the side of the wall. and it was a smudge from the distance I was looking at it. And as I got closer, I was ready to paint it. She had written in pencil, Charlie. And I couldn't paint over it. It's there. It will stay there for as long as I have this house.
Yeah, you dare not paint that. That's for sure, George.
No, you can't. So I want your reaction economically to this Trump potential presidency. I say potential because today a lot of people are talking about the Electoral College. And this is weird because what I'm told is that they're concerned over the protesters and they don't know what they're going to do. Now, I find that unbelievable. What do you hear?
Well, it's funny that you ask that because I heard that in your intro, George, and the electors around through the Electoral College of each of the states, they have what are referred to in 24 of the states faithless electors, which means that they can actually change their vote if they so desire to do so. And part of our new book is all about, you know, the avarice and greed of our politicians and the capital that they use in the form of money and power and favors to sway people to do different things. So you're right when you said it's not over just yet. The Electoral College will be counted on December 19th, the day of my granddaughter's arrival. George, I sure hope it doesn't change anything, not because of the candidates, but because of the process. I think the founders were very wise in using the Electoral College because, and I know the arguments can be made on both sides, but every year California and New York would decide our elections if we didn't have the Electoral College.
That's right.
And we saw this year that it was the whole country that made the decision.
Well, and it was set up, of course, the Electoral College was set up since the beginning of this country, of course, because our forefathers were concerned that, a small majority would control the country and run wild with it. So they were very smart to do what they did.
You're exactly right, and that's another part of the basis of our book. Our founders, the more we study history, my co-author, Lowell Ponte, and I know you know Lowell.
Good guy.
He's terrific and a brilliant researcher. And writer, matter of fact, he does all the heavy.
And our buddy Pat Boone wrote the foreword to your book.
Yeah, but as we study the founders, George, they were brilliant, brilliant men, and they anticipated these type of things happening because they understood when men are left to their own desires and their own wills, they tend to become a bit greedy, mm-hmm. a bit arrogant. And as we write in the book, that John Adams said that our Constitution was designed for people of religious values and morality. And I would argue, as we do in the book, George, that we have lost both of those within our society to a great extent. And because of that, we're literally running ripshod over a Constitution that works perfectly. You know, people think of the Constitution just as a document. But I want you to think of George Norrie. George Norrie has a constitution. He has a basic set of principles that he lives and runs his life by. And he, unless information changes, he does not change that constitution.
That's true.
And the constitution was us saying as a nation, here's what we believe in, here's how we're going to operate, and this is what's best going forward if we are going to maintain liberty, freedom, and opportunity. You know, most people think, George, that wealth is just supposed to be given. The only natural occurrence that happens in nature is poverty. To have wealth, you have to produce, you have to work, you have to earn, you have to create. And so the founders understood this, and the founders knew that if there weren't people that had moral values and basic religious principles, whether they be Judeo-Christian or Muslim or whatever, a set of honest values, the society would fall apart. And we argue in the book, ever since we started debasing our money dramatically in 1971 when Nixon closed the gold window, we've been debasing the values of our society. And so the founders had it right in our money system, they had it right in our legal system, and they surely had it right in the way we vote.
Well, with Craig Smith, author of Money, Morality, and the Machine. Craig, we know what money is. We know what morality is. What's the machine?
Well, the machine is actually It's a very complicated thing to describe, George, but I'll put it in simple terms. When you remember the famous quote from Dwight Eisenhower when he gave his farewell address.
Oh, about the military-industrial complex,
that's
right?
That's right. He said, and that machine was a machine that ultimately became corrupt with central bankers, financiers, politicians. And at the end of the Cold War, they basically seized control of our government and our economy in what we consider to be a quiet coup d'etat. And maybe if Mr. Trump, President-elect Trump, becomes our president, which I sure hope happens, and I believe it will, hopefully he can start to change the direction that we've been on. Because, George, we have been taken over as a country.
Oh, no, there's no doubt. Craig, let's talk a little bit more about that and much more about your work, Money, Morality, and the Machine, when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Craig Smith with us. We're going to take calls with Craig next hour. He's the author of many books, including what we're talking about tonight, Money, Morality, and the Machine. His website, CraigRSmith.com, is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Lots to talk with you about, Craig, but let's get back to the machine portion of this. You are right. Things are out of control right now, aren't they?
Yeah, they really are, and I think most Americans feel it. I think this was the first election cycle I can remember in a long time, and excluding the two players that we had as candidates, everybody was extremely on edge. And you know, George, just by way of history, I can kind of condense this rapidly for
sure.
People, because we have created from, as Dwight Eisenhower said, beware the industrial military complex.
That's right. He was right.
Complex.
He was right.
Well, he saw what was happening because, see, the Congress would appropriate money to the defense contractors. They would build the bombs and tanks and so on and so forth to fight the wars that we had to fight. But then that money would find its way back to Washington, D.C., and all of a sudden this incestuous relationship developed. Well, they had to add to that over time, and so next thing you know, they started putting people on welfare in the 60s, and that gained more votes and more power. So now you had a warfare state and then a welfare state. Well, by the end of the 90s, or the end of the 80s, early 90s, Ronald Reagan and George W. H.W. Bush had won the Cold War. We slowed down military spending, and all of a sudden that money stopped flowing to the contractors. So the contributions stopped flowing back to Washington. In enter the fellows from Wall Street. They went to Wall Street and said, hey, can you guys help us out here? Next thing you know, they start lining the politicians' pockets with money, and all of a sudden they start changing the laws. And now all of a sudden the Glass-Steagall Act is enacted.
Mm-hmm.
They break down the wall between the banks and the investment houses, and next thing you know, we have 2008, and all cane breaks loose in America in the financial system. And so this incestuous relationship we have between the bankers and the contractors and the welfare recipients, George, do you know that out of a dollar that's spent on welfare today, 19 cents ends up in the recipient's hands or to the benefit of the recipient? 79 cents of every dollar, welfare dollar that's spent, is spent by fueling the federal government processing the payments for pizza.
Oh, jeez.
It's gotten just ridiculously out of control, and that's why we have the $20 trillion debt that we have. But more importantly, we're debasing the values of our society. Because think of it in these terms, George. Let's say you take the average guy that's driving a truck right now, and he's listening to this program, and he's working 40, 50 hours a week. And let's just round it off and say that's 2,100 hours a year, and he takes home $40,000. Okay, and so he's put all that labor in to bring home $40,000, and yet somebody at the Federal Reserve can push one button in 1 second, making nothing, producing nothing, offering no labor, and can create $1 billion, $1 trillion, $10 trillion.
Out of thin air.
And so what have we done to that hardworking truck driver who's busting his back out on the road, making this country run? And that's why I think you have this feeling amongst the people right now that said, enough is enough. We need to get back on the right track. And the founders knew that this would happen. They warned us about it. Our politicians like Dwight D. Eisenhower warned us about it. And even while I'm very optimistic about a future Trump administration, we are going to have to go through some very difficult times that you and I have talked about before, George.
Well, here's my concern, though, Craig. I mean, already, I mean, he's not even in office yet, and I'm hearing stories that he's backing down on many of his pledges. You've heard the same thing. That's a little jarring, isn't it?
Yes, but I must say that it's coming from the same media that told me he had no chance of winning. It's coming from the same people, the pundits that made jokes that said he was a clown and that he, you know, we have to keep in mind what Donald Trump did. And look, he wasn't my first choice. Don't get me wrong. But George, he took on the establishment. He took on the media. He took on the Clinton political.
Well, he hit the nerve of everything you and I are talking about right now about why people are so ticked off. And he hit that nerve. I just hope he follows through with the pledges and promises he made to get elected. Because if he said, and you know, these were his words, we will repeal Obamacare. And now we're hearing things like, well, I like this, and I like this, and I like this. And those may be great provisions. You know, they may be great provisions. I mean, I think if people have prior conditions, they shouldn't be denied help or coverage. But the point is, you don't go out and tell the world, we're going to repeal this, and then back down. It looks bad.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. And I think that there are people like yourself that are influential in the media that are going to be able to hold Donald Trump accountable. I think that's one thing that you're going to see this election cycle. It seems to be that this isn't partisan, but it just doesn't seem to me that Mr. Obama was held to account for many of the things that he did by the mainstream media. You can bet your life that Donald Trump is going to be scrutinized seven ways to Sunday on every single move that he makes. And so I don't think he has a lot of wiggle room, George.
No, he does not. Now, here's the other question, and we'll get deep into your work. These protests that are going on around the country, and they're not going to stop, they've got to be organized. I mean, we're hearing things now about a march, in Washington when he's sworn in. By a million women who are upset with him. Who's organizing these things, Craig?
Well, we know for a fact a couple of them were organized because they have people that took home videos of it where 100 buses were lined up where they were busing people into for the protests. So we know that some of it is, and it's alleged that it's being financed by George Soros and some of his organization.
Well, we know George Soros did some financing here in the St. Louis area during the tragedy in Ferguson several years ago when Michael Brown was shot by a police officer, and the officer, of course, was exonerated during the scuffle. But we're told George Soros funded some of the protesters.
Yes, you're absolutely correct, George. And today George Soros was meeting with Nancy Pelosi and some other high-level Democrats trying to figure out how they were going to, quote, thwart the first 100 days of the Trump administration to make sure that he couldn't get anything through.
Well, and I think, my gut tells me, he's going to be behind some kind of Electoral College mishap. It's just my gut feeling. You know how intuitive I am, Craig, but I think that those number of states that you just mentioned that have the right to change and alter their votes, it's not going to take much to flip one to the other. We're not talking about having to change every vote. We're just talking about enough to get to 272 and enough to get under 272. That's all they need to do.
You know, I have the same concern. I mean, the whole idea of the 24 states that have what are referred to as the faithless electors, that concerns me greatly. And look, this is the first time that I can ever remember, George, when the losing side went nuts. I mean, people were crying and breaking down, and they have students. Now, look, these little kids in school are not out protesting. This is all being put together by their teachers, for Pete's sakes. I mean, the horrible video of that woman throwing her little son out of the house because he voted for Trump in the classroom. I mean, I think this has gotten beyond the absurd. One thing our nation has been absolutely brilliant with and known for is our transfer, peaceable transfer of power, even if we don't like the other side. Look, I was very proud of America in 2008 when I didn't vote for Barack Obama, but when he won, I was very proud that we finally broke that barrier, George, and I think it was good for the nation.
Yes.
In 2012, I didn't vote for Obama again because I didn't like what he did with health care and the policies that he had.
Exactly.
But I didn't start screaming bloody murder and rioting and shutting down highways. That is not protest as we're known as Americans. Look, it's one thing if you want to stand on the side of the road and hold a sign and do and exhibit your First Amendment freedom of speech. I'm all for that. But when you shut that highway down, George, what if you're in an ambulance and you're dying of a heart attack and
yes.
you're heading for the hospital?
And you've got to get your grandfather to the hospital and you can't get through there.
Right. To me, that is vigilante justice, if you will.
Or breaking windows and car windows and businesses in for protesting? Come on, that's not a peaceful protest.
No, you're absolutely right, George. And look, I think that 99% of all Americans are disgusted by what they see. You know, there's an old saying in media, and you know it well, George, if it bleeds, it leads. So these protests are going to get all the space on television. They're going to be played over and over again, 24/7 on the cables. And yet it's a very small fraction of the American people. And look, I understand people are upset with this one. I understand people just can't figure out where this guy Donald Trump came from and how he was able to pull this off. But he did. And it's time for us to move on as a country and support our president, just like we did with Barack Obama and just like we did with George Bush.
And if you don't like him, vote him out in 4 years.
Exactly, George.
Because, Craig, in 2 years, new candidates are going to start popping up for the Democrats all over the place.
You bet. Midterms will tell the whole story, George, won't it? If these people are that upset about everything, then they can simply give the Congress back to their side and the Senate back to their side, and you have a president that virtually can do nothing.
Absolutely, indeed. So when we get back into the situation with the money, my earlier news guest, Michael Shedlock, was talking about how rates seem to be trickling up again. Do you predict that the Fed, that has kept interest rates at a ridiculously low rate, that they're going to increase those interest rates soon enough?
Yeah, I don't think they're going to have a choice, George. As Mish was saying, you know, the 10-year note is already back up to 2.25, and you know we're starting to see rates rise naturally as it is. And keep in mind that Donald Trump, when he was interviewed in 2015 on WMUR TV back in New Hampshire, he talked that he was absolutely for auditing the Federal Reserve. He was very vocal about his dislike for Janet Yellen and Ben Bernanke, how the zero interest rate policies had killed savings, you know, retirees that had savings accounts, and were causing a distortion in our economy. And look, we have bubbles that are forming all over this economy. And we talk a little bit about it in the book. I mean, we're starting to see now a move towards what's called DLT, digital legal tender. We're going to start doing
like bitcoins, right?
Exactly. As a matter of fact, Canada, Bank of Canada, has what's called a CanCoin now. And we quote Tim Cook in our book where he says, your children will not know what money looks like because they have Apple Pay and Google Pay. And we are moving so rapidly down this road, George, that we want to avoid reality. Well, in theory, though,
Craig, the money in the bank, our banks, it's digital, isn't it? In theory.
Well, certainly. I mean,
try to get a lot of cash out of a bank. It's like getting into Fort Knox.
Well, you're absolutely right. Remember, we talked about that the last time we were together, George. We put in the back of our book a challenge to tell people to go out and go try and cash a check and report back to us what happened. We gave away a lot of books on your program that night.
I remember that.
We got hundreds of letters saying, you're right. They wanted to know what it was for. They didn't have that much money available. They sent me to two different branches. I mean, we are moving into an age, George, where, in my opinion, things are moving way too fast. And I'm going to say something that's going to sound very old-fashioned, George Norrie, and that is, I don't like the 21st century that much. I'd rather be in the 20th
century. Well, but we're here, kid. We got to make it work.
You better believe it. And that's why we wrote the book, because the machine, we're never going to stop it, George. We may slow it down. We're never going to stop it, because as long as there's people that will take money to sit on a beach in Hawaii, you know, in Hawaii, you get the equivalent of $60,000 a year in benefits if you're on welfare. As long as we have that, we're not going to stop the machine. We know it's impossible to force morality in a nation. Okay, so therefore, the only shot we have is to be able to protect our money against further debasement of our society and the money itself. And that's what the book basically lays out. We point out 19 various traps that are out there that are set for your money. And look, this is not a silver bullet book, George. We don't have simple solutions. It took over 100 years for us to get into this mess. It's going to take several decades for us to get out of the mess. But the good news is, for your grandchildren and mine, it can be fixed. And I just hope, George, that this election season, people finally, excuse the expression, drew the line in the sand and said, we've had enough. We want accountability from our politicians. We want a Federal Reserve that's accountable. We want bankers, if they break the laws, they go to jail. I mean, look at Iceland. When the bankers broke the laws up there, they all went to jail. We didn't have a single banker that spent a moment in jail for these things. Okay.
Well, look at the Wells Fargo disaster. 5,300 people fired for creating fictitious accounts. Nobody's gone to jail for that either.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And, you know, I know this is going to sound harsh, but back in the 1800s, 1700s, you stole a man's horse, you could get hung. Today, you can go steal $1 billion from a bank, and they give you a bonus at the end of it.
Yeah, you're a hero.
So things have to change, and that's why the quote from John Adams is so important, because we've lost our morality. And I don't want to say we collectively, because there's still a lot of great, decent, honest, hardworking, wonderful people in this nation. Thank God for them, or else we wouldn't have a nation. But we have a bunch of corrupt politicians and bankers and financial manipulators that are manipulating this system, and they're playing games with people's futures. And I don't know about you, George, but I don't want anybody playing any games with my future. I've always had a saying, I want the government to stay.
Or your new little grandchild, Greg.
Exactly. I want her to have the same freedom and liberty. You know, George, freedom and liberty means the freedom to prosper, but it also means the freedom to fail, George.
Yeah.
And that if you fail, you pick yourself up and you start all over again. Look, George Norrie didn't get to be where he was in the first 15 minutes of his career, yet we see kids nowadays, they want to build an app and become a billionaire overnight. It's a wonderful thing, but sometimes it takes some time.
You know, takes a lot of time.
We live in this age where everybody expects everything now, and they're entitled to have it now, and that's just not how life works.
Greg, we are bullish on precious metals. We've got a great client, Lear Capital, that is bullish on gold and silver. You are bullish on gold and silver. How do you see that over the next few years?
Yeah, I think that the market, you know, with the Trump election, as you noticed, the market dropped a little bit. And it did that because the bonds started increasing on their yield. So people were able to move some of their money back to the 10-year. I'm very optimistic about the price of gold. And George, I don't make predictions. And you know, I'm good friends with the fellow that owns Lear. They're a terrific company. And your clients are in very capable hands. But I hate to make predictions, but I can tell you this. It's going to be a lot higher than where it is today for another reason that I think is going to have to do with Donald Trump, and that is that Donald Trump is very much open to looking at a gold standard. Two of the people that sit on his financial advisory board, one being John Paulson. John Paulson is the fifth largest owner of the Spider Gold Fund, the GLD Gold Fund. Okay, there's another lady, Forsythe, if I remember her name correctly, who has suggested that a gold standard would not be out of the question. George, if we start talking like that, you could see gold move from $1,225 to $5,000 in a matter of years.
Craig, stay with us. We're going to come back in just a moment. Another hour to go with you. We will take phone calls. Craig Smith with us. His latest book, Money, Morality, and the Machine. He is so spot on, folks, about so many things. And his website, again, it's linked up at coasttocoastam.com. It's CraigRSmith.com. We'll be back in a moment right here on Coast to Coast AM.